Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tom, are you feeling the heat?
I know who's feeling the heat. Brittany Anderson's feeling the heat.
Oh my God!
This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haverstraw.
Tom, 13 contestants. Interesting challenge. Both this sort of away game dessert. Chefs hate cooking dessert. And then we have the African diaspora as the inspiration for the Elimination Challenge. Great food tour around Portland. I am increasingly having fun on this show. I love the interstitial, let's go eating food part of the show now. You know, it used to be, just get me to the competition, right? Like, I mean, I'm here for that. No, but I'm kind of increasingly loving this. So, Tom, I mean, what are your early impressions? 13 chef testants. What were you picking up early on?
Picking up that I just traded Kobe Bryant for Vlade Divac. That's what I just did. Last week, we were deliberating and haggling over a trade. I send over Don and Kiki in exchange for Maria and Brittany, the rights to Maria and Brittany. And it was an awful trade 1 week into that trade. So I'm not feeling great about that, Kevin. And I like the other contestants that I have on my team. I think Gabe and Gabriel, I think Gabe himself is right there in that tier just below Shota. Shota is just – he's on another level. Even though he didn't win this one, I just really think that he's separated himself from the pack. It just was an episode that I think was marked by Brittany's complete unraveling on this episode, a two-time James Beard Award semifinalist who just seemed to completely lose herself. And we see this time from time in Top Chef, but I can't remember a time where someone came into the competition with maybe I'm just being a credentialist here, but it really did feel like she didn't seem to know who she was as a chef, despite all the awards and the restaurants that she's opened. I think she just one of those examples that Tyler Anderson mentioned, that you can be an amazing chef, but it might take someone with a different kind of DNA or a different kind of disposition to be successful on this show.
Yeah, I have sort of a slightly different interpretation, which is I think she knows who she is as a chef. It's just not right now what the competition is looking for. And so I think that's sort of my thing. I mean, I was sort of taken aback by like, oh, I don't know who I am as a chef. It's like, you've got like four restaurants. They're all good, apparently. Like, you've got two awards. Like, don't tell anyone you don't know who you are as a chef. I think, you know, you mentioned Tyler. I think sometimes the show demands you be a certain thing, and that's okay. Like, that's the contest, right? Conform to this. Oh, you don't cook with these flavors? Tough. You don't like cooking dessert? Tough. You're less of a technical chef? Tough. And, I mean, that's what I think makes the show interesting. But, you know, it was also, and we'll get to the, we'll get to her elimination challenge, but and sort of her one bad decision, I think, that cost her. But early on, we have the kind of, and I don't want to say, you know, it's funny, no one complained about the dessert challenge. Usually that's always, you know, inevitably, I think every single time, every season, there's a dessert challenge and it cuts to, you know, the interview saying, I don't really cook dessert in my restaurant, you know, like, right. And I'm not a pastry chef. But no one did that this time, but it was kind of a fun one. I like layer desserts. There were some more layery than others.
Yeah, it was there was a lot of latitude in that definition of three layers, I would say.
Yeah. And Brittany actually committed one of the great crimes.
This
Top
is what
Chef.
I'm saying, man. Yeah. Like, she just it wasn't just the elimination challenge. This entire episode, she was stepping on rakes like she was Sideshow Bob in The Simpsons.
Right. Like, you have to make your own pasta. You have to make your own cookies. You have to make your own pie crust. You have to make, you know, your own noodles, right? Like, it's just kind of a staple of the show is there's no easier way to kind of ruin your stead with the judges than getting store-bought stuff.
Did you make this cookie, Brittany?
No, it's like Pepperidge Farms made it. Like,
shout out to Norwalk, Connecticut. Like, yeah,
Mrs. Fields made. Oh, is that a Connecticut product?
Yeah.
I mean, by the way, Pepperidge Farm cookies in those little white sacks,
and Milano's.
I mean, I'm actually a Brussels guy. I always found the Milano's a little too pastry-ish. Like, the ratio of chocolate filling to pastry, the Brussels to me has always been kind of the underrated. Also, I'm a chess man guy.
Well,
you know, I like the basic short. Well, that's a great product.
Yeah, I like Milano. They came out with like a mint Milano a few years ago, and I'm just a sucker for that. And I'm also a sucker for anything peanut butter and chocolate, which means Avishar had the key to my heart with these Buckeyes that he made in this one.
Yeah, no, it's really great. Like, so a Buckeye is basically just a peanut butter ball dipped in chocolate, but he does it brilliantly because what he does is he takes advantage of his whole molecular gastronomy thing. So he just makes, you know, what he does is he makes the PB a gelato, and then he gives it this crunchy layer in between. And then, like, it's dipped in sort of this, it's almost magic shell, it looked like, which I, you know, magic shell is just a great thing. So he was able to sort of take this very state fair kind of dessert, just very basic. He gives it three completely unusual textures, and I'm excited. I'm good. It's fun to see. He was so emotional when he won this quickfire. It was endearing. I'm a huge fan of Avishar. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, what do you think his prospects are long term? But all of a sudden, he sort of is right the ship.
And I was a little nervous, I got to admit, when Padma was chewing on it. Did you have that moment of like, oh, shit, he just basically gave him glass?
Right. Like, it was just really cold. I mean, I expected the comment to be, yeah, unfortunately, the center was rock solid. I could barely bite
into it. Yeah, he gave me a jawbreaker. Jesus, Avishar, yeah. Right? Like, that didn't happen. And I it was a big surprise that Padma actually really liked it. You give me any sort of peanut butter, chocolate, anything. I think I had a half-baked peanut butter chocolate half pint last night, and I just blacked out. I didn't even remember eating it. It was so good. From Ben & Jerry's.
All right. So, but here's some peanut butter next time you're over. So when I had this surgery over October, this sleep apnea, like tonsillitis, or not something, tonsillectomy, the whole deal, right? Like, just, I could not eat solid foods for 14 days. So I just decided to go on a huge Jell-O pudding parfait kick. So like every night in our house, I made a different variation of the Jell-O parfait. And so, do you know the chain Friendly's?
Oh my,
that you see on
are you kidding all right, me all right.
So Tom, I mastered
you just opened
the
up
Friendly's peanut the Friendly's peanut sauce.
Kevin, inject it into my veins. Inject it into my veins. The Friendly's peanut butter sauce is legendary.
I made it from scratch. I got the I went to Eric, we went to the Walmart supermarket with, like, and I got this big thing of corn syrup and I made it from scratch. It was the best thing in our house made last year, and I made some good food last year. But the peanut butter sauce from Friendly's, it is online. You can find the recipe, you can make it, and it, you put that with some chocolate pudding. And I'm going to serve you. You know what? You got to come back.
Also a New England favorite, Friendly's, by the way. So we've got Pepperidge Farm and Friendly's. Shout out to Friendly's. I used to, when I was in a kid, we would always, like, after a big game or something, like, we would go to Friendly's, sit down, and I would get the peanut butter cup sundae. And that syrup, like, I can taste it, right? I'm salivating right now as you're describing it, because it's so good. And the idea of doing a homemade version scares me, because what you, it's like meeting your heroes. You never want to meet your heroes, because if you try to do it yourself, it's never going to meet expectations. What you're telling me is that you and Eric have perfected the Friendly's, a homemade version of the Friendly's peanut butter sauce.
Oh, no. Eric ain't done shit. He didn't own a spatula when I met him. He ate it. I did.
He taste tested,
but
yeah.
He loved it, and he's actually, like you, a peanut butter, like, dessert guy, and so anyway. But yeah, so Avishar with the Buckeye. Byron had a nice showing. I think the trick to this particular quickfire is you either have to play with kind of the sour tart element, or you got to really play with texture. You got to do one of those two things to impress the judges. And Byron kind of took the sour tart, the goat cheese ice cream. I always love that sort of sourish gelato, sourish ice cream kind of thing, or even savory ice cream. He does the fig date jam, a brioche, walnuts. Like, he's got it going on. I mean, you know, Byron's kind of been in the weeds. He's neither impressed nor bricked anything. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just kind of – he's hanging around. And but it was nice to see him. And then Sarah, self-deprecating Sarah, couldn't believe it. But her cream puff – does the anti-Britney, right? Like, decides, I'm going to make pastry in 45 yeah. minutes. I'm going to dust it with matcha. I'm going to grill my strawberries. Sarah is a very good chef, Tom Hamilton.
Yes, and I think she also doesn't suffer from Katsuji-itis, I would say, is what Maria had, which is just too much going on. That plate that Maria put out, probably tasty, probably really good. But in terms of the competition of, like, make a three-layer dessert, it seemed like she just – put way too much going on there. But Sarah also just seems like the aw shucksism is just working to her favor, because I feel like the judges, if they did like a blind taste test, they'd be like, whoever made this, conceived of this dish and is super confident and just has everything together. And then she's just like, what? I can't believe it. I didn't even know if that was any good. And then it's like, wait, you did that? Like, Sarah is so – I love watching her compete in this, because whatever kind of in her own head or just not really sure of what she's doing, the plate itself looks completely opposite of that. And those cream puffs, man, with the matcha dust, man, out of this world.
Yeah, I mean, I think – so both Maria and Kiki kind of suffered from the same consequence, which is, I think Maria probably is fine if the rice froze. you know, and it didn't freeze. So now she's got to kind of slop it together. And same thing with Kiki, right? Like if her whipped cream is cold and there was time to get it cold, she's probably fine. I imagine Kiki's peach cobbler is
fantastic. Yeah, but the crust they said was unpalatable.
Well, right. But she had to kind of go to the crust last minute because she needed a third layer. And she was like, oh shit, right? Like that was kind of her oh shit mm-hmm. moment. And so it is great. Like I mean, therein lies sort of the real challenge of cooking, or baking rather, which is it's a chemistry experiment. You can't, when you're doing cold, you can't fake it. You're doing hot, you can just blaze something into, I mean, you can heat something in a skillet in a pan in like 30 seconds, but you cannot freeze something quickly. And so when you need cold and it doesn't come and you've got a whipped cream, you're just going to be left with nothing. And so unfortunately, poor Maria and poor Kiki got kind of stuck with the temperature issue. And then Brittany, of course, with her like store-bought gingerbread cookie, which is just kind of a disaster.
Yeah. What did you think of Chris's Oregon Trail mushroom cream?
Yeah, they clearly were weird out, but actually, and then, I mean, I think it was, who was it who said, yeah, it was interesting. Fancy Toast.
Yeah. Carrie. She thought it was interesting. I think they all gave those like questionable looks like, what? Really? A mushroom cream out? I don't know. I love mushrooms. I don't know how I'd feel in a sweet dish. I've never had that before. So I'd be curious to see what that tasted like. Other highlights is, you know, Shota did a smoked whipped yogurt. He clearly like he hasn't bricked at all. Like he hasn't even hit the rim on any of these. No. So yeah, I think the highlight for me was seeing Avishar. Not just the concept of the Buckeye Bomb Bomb, but just giving this week, it was really impressive to see him turn around after having, you know, stumbling out of the block early on. So it's, look, Sarah is a monster. So is Shota. Avishar is coming into his own, but Maria, Kiki, and Brittany, just not a good showing for them.
Yeah, it's always interesting which four chefs kind of get or three chefs got left out just because they just don't have enough time. So the two Gabes and Nelson, by the way. OK, of the 10 desserts, which do you order?
I think Avishar's. I'm sorry. Like if I see that on a menu, a liquid nitrogen frozen Buckeye bonbon, I'm like, oh, let's go.
Yeah, no, I totally understand.
What would you go with?
Probably. And I get made fun of in this house for sort of liking like in Eric's telling, it's like, oh yeah, Kevin's going to order the hibiscus ice with herbs and sorrel, you know? And so I would probably go smoked yogurt with matcha and miso crumble. However, in my lowbrow dessert category, I do love a corner piece of brownie, a little burnt brownie. I do like that. So Jamie's burnt brownie. And also I'm kind of fascinated by the toasted rice mousse from Dawn, you know, that looked pretty good. So, you know, I think, but I probably go with good old Shota just because I kind of like that weirdo miso matcha crumble.
Can we talk about his laugh? He's right up there with Brian Voltaggio's laugh. It's the most distinct, he laughs at everything and it's just a very, I think magical elves have picked up on it that he is just adorable with that thing. So Shota, for someone who I think coming in, I didn't think he might have this kind of bubbly personality. He is just, he's electric. He's great.
Yeah. So then we go on a food tour and it's really fun. And, African food in particular is just, it is so yummy. I got a chance to spend 3 weeks in Ghana, I think 2000 was, oh my God, it's been like 14 years. And you just have these beautiful, beautiful, deep, rich stews and sauces. And then you have kind of as your base, and we saw, you know, Kiki make some fufu. You have either like a fufu or banku or gari. It's basically like, I don't want to call it like African dumpling. It's usually made from like cassava dough or corn or yam. And it's like, you know, essentially a starchy ball. And what I love about African food is you use your hands, right? So you take a pinch of fufu or banku or gari and you dip it in the sauce. I started cooking when I got home with red palm oil when I got home from Africa. It's got this really nice high smoke point. It's kind of like an earthy taste. And it's great because you can use red palm oil with any kind of food. And it has that immediate kind of African flavor when you do it. It was also so much fun to watch Gregory introduce the chefs to Haitian cuisine, like introducing griot. And obviously, he is Mr. Pickley's.
Yeah. Pickley's, like, if you haven't had it before, I mean, every time he put Pickley's on a dish in his last season, it was just like, oh my God, this is amazing.
And the other thing is, so one of the interesting things about griot, which he introduced, is it's kind of it's a pork dish with Pickley's. And the New York Times cooking section, which I love, by the way, like the New York Times recipe vault is, I mean, you can, these are accessible recipes. Anybody can do them, but they're delicious. But one of my favorite things to do in a New York Times recipe is to read the comments, because like in under griot, there was this like polite debate that got a little bit testy at times, like Haitian commenters saying, I'm sorry, griot is always fried, not baked in the oven. And it's just like one of the fun things to do is to read the New York Times recipe comments when you have sort of the well actually crowd.
Yeah.
It's sort of like reading TripAdvisor bad reviews. Like I think that's kind of fun. So or like Yelp. But anyway, it was just a really fun food tour.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like, ah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
like so many fun flavors. It is true, like just the amalgamation of African tastes in cultures and food cultures all around the world. It's just it's fun eating.
It was a big red flag here that Brittany could not handle the spice of the red stew. And it's one thing, like, it's one thing if you aren't drinking alcohol and you don't want to drink alcohol for these dishes or taste it. But it's another to just like just shy away from using spice. And that's my worry is with Brittany, where it's like she was sitting down at a Akati and she was just like, oh, my God, the spice. That is really spicy. And meanwhile, everyone else just seems to be having a pleasant time. And that was like, to me, it was like, uh-oh, big red flag here is in a dish that or in a competition that requires you to put lots of seasoning, make sure everything's got flavor. I just kind of, this was a premonition that she was not going to excel in this particular competition. But man, yeah. Gabriel, you know, I think it was an important moment to see Gabriel say, I'm embarrassed as a Portland chef that I've never eaten here before. And it kind of reminded me of last season in LA, All-Star season, how they went down. Was it Figueroa? What was the street?
Figueroa?
Yeah. What was the street that, Pico. Right. They just decided to hit
the Jonathan Gold. Yeah. Beach to downtown.
Yeah, it was kind of like that, where they decided to bring the chefs to downtown restaurants that probably aren't getting Michelin star ratings, but they might be just as good tasting. So this was this was really cool. And so they went to Akati, which is the West African cuisine, then Yad, which is Jamaican. And I didn't catch the food. Was it a food truck, the Guyanese food?
Yeah, I think it was Guyanese, yeah. I think it was a truck.
Yeah.
By the way, God bless food trucks in Portland. I hope we'll see a few more of them. I mean, it's now kind of par for the course that every major city has a ton of food trucks. But Portland, I think, pretty much popularized this nationally. And there are so many fun ones, and they've been doing it a long time. It was just – and also, it's just a way for chefs to – you know, who can't afford to get a commercial space. It's just such – it's been one of the great trends – of the last 15 years for that reason, not because it's cute or, you know, or novelty or almost a sort of staple of hipster life. It's more just people who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford to cook can cook and serve their food to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was important to see also Kiki, how emotional she was when she was hearing the story and having sitting down at the table with Gregory and understanding that, you know, for a lot of chefs like Kiki, where it was like, I grew up people not wanting or thinking our food was good or important or relevant. And I think it is great to see Kwame and Gregory going to these places. And my favorite moment of the night was when Kwame said, you know, I asked people, have you ever had West African cuisine? And they say, no. And he says, yes, you have. And that was really cool.
Right. No, it was cool. It's really fun to eat. Now, I will say this, and we've talked about this on the show before. I feel for Brittany in this way. At a certain point in my life, as you know, I stopped tolerating really spicy food. In fact, I think it's at this point a full-on allergy. I was putting together my salmon rub the other night, which I like to do when I do the grill. It's like chili powder and dried mustard and a little cocoa and a little cinnamon and a lot of cumin. And just by having the chili powder out, my scalp started to sweat.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's 61 degrees in Los Angeles and I didn't even taste anything. And so some of us like with my Eastern European stomach, something has happened and spice. It's not a question of, ooh, I don't like it or I'm not curious. Like the truth is I love spicy food. It does not like me. And I think it is tough for some people. I mean, it's not a taste thing or a curiosity thing. It is a bodily, and look, nobody knows more about this than you do, man. You popularized a national trend with your, you know,
eating
hot pepper challenge.
Peppers for fun.
Look, there's a reason it's a challenge, right? And not everybody is constitutionally equipped to deal with that, just biologically. And so I do have some sympathy for Brittany. Like if you're not well conditioned in spicy food, it is tough.
Let me ask you this, because I think for Brittany, I agree with you, is that because her body does not agree, or her senses do not agree to spicy food. And there was that little exchange there where she said, you know, I don't like spicy food, or I can't handle spicy food. And they said, well, you can handle flavor, right? There's that. Okay. Yeah. But then I want to talk to you about Chris's decision to make Haitian food without having made Haitian food before.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think a little bit is too much is made of this, oh, I've never made it before. Like, there are spice profiles. I mean, there are braises. Like, there are ways, if you've never made Haitian food before, to honor the challenge. Like, I thought a little bit too much was placed on, I don't know how to do this. Yes, you're obviously at an advantage if you've cooked with these flavors, if you've cooked with these techniques, if you're someone who's made a griot. But the idea, because, I mean, look, we saw Shota do it. Right? Like a clove allspice sauce. Brilliant, right? Like you're able to do the challenge. Sarah basically makes a congee, a Chinese dish, you know, with pork floss and everything, but gives it a jerk spice gravy and pick leaves, right? Like it's not all that hard to do this. You don't have to be grounded in that. Like you know the spices. There's so many distinct ones. You make a roti. Every culture has its roti. Yes. You know, roti from Trinidad is going to be a specific thing, but you can interpret it. I just, too much was made of that. It's a cop-out. Like, you know, you can marinate your protein in a, you know, even like Gabriel's red stew braised lamb shoulder. Right, okay. He screwed up the mashed potatoes, but they love the lamb. I mean, it seemed like they really liked the braised lamb. It was just the other accompaniments. By the way, what is more 90s than like designer mashed potatoes?
I know. I cringed when I heard
like
that.
Like 80s, yeah. Really. Like I was kind of, because he's been a really creative chef thus far. And I was just like, really?
Yeah. The goat cheese, was it goat cheese and olive oil mash? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the dish that Richard Blaze was like, I'm going to say what everyone wants to say. This dish is too white. It was like Gabriel. I'm worried for Gabriel. Not so much Gabe. Gabe, I think, is really great. I think he is also one of those chefs that he just knows what he's doing. He's got a great understanding of flavor. He's someone that I think when all said and done, I think he's kind of like Kevin Gillespie in this All-Star season where he's just hanging around. Mm-hmm. He's not going to brick any shots. And then, man, he's going to be a problem. Like in a couple of weeks, I think he's just going to blossom.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think he's, you know, a really strong, you know, he has that combines technical acuity with just sort of soul and homeliness. Yeah. And I think it's a really, you know, I think Kevin is a perfect comp there. By the way, Maria in the middle. Maria is Ms. Middle. She doesn't brick very often. I mean, I know her dessert in the quick fire kind of was a clunker just because of more. It seems more just because of the sheer size of it than anything else. Nelson is interesting too, Tom, because he's clearly a good chef. But I agree. Like even before they even said it, I'm like, oh look, it's a protein, you know, with a specific kind of sauce. Yucca or plantains, you know, there is kind of a sameness to his plates. And we haven't seen a lot of, you know, out of comfort zone. He's kind of doing the same variation or different variation of the same dish.
Right. And I think you can stay true to your home or your main influence here with Shota. You can absolutely see that you can be true to his Japanese techniques, but lend it every dish to the competition, right? The challenge. And I'm not seeing that from Nelson, the creativity of like, I'm going to do this. And he says, I'm going to do it with a twist, but there really wasn't that twist there.
Right. And I think, yeah, so that's something to watch. You know, Byron all of a sudden is cooking good food. You know, I think both of us were wholly unimpressed with him in the first episode. He was way down. He was kind of bottom of the barrel in terms of draft. But, you know, the red stew marinated snapper, they love. They like the cod cake a lot, which is such a kind of a classic accompaniment in a lot of Caribbean food. And so, you know, I mean, talk about hanging around. Like, I don't see a lot of clunkers here. And Avishar, You know, I mean, he looked like a mess in the first episode. We kind of both sensed that he rode the coattails of Shoden episode two. Not the case. I mean, honestly, it seemed like there were so many dishes that could have been placed in the top three. I mean, the judges were effusive about most of the things that landed on the table. Abishar shrimp and grits gave it a little Bengali eggplant. Escabeche, kind of a little bit of his story. Taro. Like, he all of a sudden is not looking bottom of the barrel. So, but let's talk about Dawn for a second.
Holy cow. What a dish.
Because, you know, I think there was a red flag early on for both of us that time management is a key part of this game. And it doesn't matter how good you are. But, you know, I saw it in the quickfire. Like, that rice, toasted rice mousse, really creative decision. She comes back. You know, on one hand, braised goat is pretty pro forma. You know, you could argue, oh, that doesn't demonstrate the most creativity. But just like last week with the ribs, I mean, this is a chef who just executes. Like, provided it gets on the plate, there is not, she hasn't made a bad component in 3 weeks, right? It's just two of them happen to be missing in consecutive weeks. But the crispy roti, the goat, the green pepper sauce puree, Tom, that looked like something for you, man.
Look, I don't even like green pepper.
I don't think it was like green pepper, like bell pepper. I think it's more like that spicy green pepper you get as a condiment in Caribbean
restaurant. That was my fear, was that it would be like a bell pepper. A green bell pepper, I think, is one of the worst flavor profiles of all the veggies you can get.
You and me both.
It does not work. So when I saw that, I was like, ooh, I don't know. And then everybody just wanted gallons of that thing. And I love that. I love that moment on Top Chef when they're like, yeah, so what, how'd you think you did on this challenge? And they're very, you know, humble. And they're like, yeah, I really think I executed well. And then you see the judges explode. Like, that fucking pepper sauce, I want the recipe. And you just kind of see this like relief, just like, emote like really just all these chefs when they hear the judges just love their dish. It's just a cool moment of they're not sure what to say. Like, should I say I really felt good about it, or should I say I could have done better, do the Sarah route? And man, Richard Blaze, Colicchio, all the judges just seem to just absolutely love this dish.
Yeah, I also want to talk about, and that was the winning dish, I want to talk about Jamie, because I think she's someone who also didn't impress us in the draft and all of a sudden is making really good food. And she did something really smart in terms of kind of melding her tradition with, you know, sort of the competition request, which is to, you know, pull from the African diaspora. She does her crispy Vietnamese snapper, right? Like, it's a dish. It's delicious. It's a classic. She executes the protein. But what she does with the couscous is smart. A starch is a place where you can really highlight spices on a blank canvas, right? So, you know, there's not a hell of a lot that is, you know, sort of African-inspired about the snapper. However, with the couscous, she just blends the spices that pay homage to the challenge. And you can do it easily because the spices will shine in a rice, in a couscous. Those are, by definition, those grains are pretty, just that's blank canvas. And so she can maintain the essential Vietnamese quality of the dish and at the same time pay homage to the couscous. So it was a beautiful way to say, hey, I want to stay in my comfort zone. This is the kind of food I want to make, but I also need to pay homage and need to do it fairly. Because, you know, like, what is one of the top critiques at the judges' table on any challenge is you didn't really honor the challenge. The African flavors didn't shine through, right? She was able to have her cake and eat it too. Whether that was intentional or not, I don't know, but it was a perfect, it got her on the top. And that's really impressive with a protein that was essentially out of Vietnam. She was able to essentially get second or third.
Yeah, you know what? One of the coolest moments from this episode was when you saw the Akati, the woman, just get downright giddy when she saw the couscous on the plate. She's like, this is the couscous that I made for her earlier today. And right. Jamie just nailed it. And I was a little nervous about that dish. I don't know if it was presentation But I was just, it didn't seem super creative. And so I was wondering if the chefs would enjoy how true the concept was to her. And she did an amazing job. And again, there's a lot of malarkey potential here where you might laugh at her because of her mannerisms, or her noises, I should say. But she is really talented.
Yeah. And again, I guess it should be no surprise that restaurant in Vegas, neither of us have been there, but people love it. And it's nowhere near downtown. It has gotten a ton of attention. It is smart, affordable, homey cooking that pulls from Vietnamese tradition, but is a crowd pleaser for everybody. And, you know, all of a sudden she's cooking really well. And again, it's interesting how much prejudice we come out of episode one, right?
Yeah.
Like, we really do a lot of evaluation, to say nothing of the fact that it's essentially their preseason, Tom. It's not a surprise that just because things aren't executed in episode one, that somehow these chefs should be written off, because it just doesn't play that way. In any competition, like, why would you ever judge a team on game one?
First impressions are super powerful. The first impression fallacy is super hard to get rid of. And it's all we really had. We had their bios and we had one episode, 45 minutes of evaluation to go work off of. So That's why a lot of the winners of our Top Chef or Pack Your Knives draft is in the middle of the draft, you know, whether it's Joe Flam or whether it's Melissa. These are people who we didn't see as like juggernauts after week one. So, but man, Shota is killing it. I want to spend just a little more time on Brittany here. Just last remarks here on Brittany is, I wonder her confidence level in her cooking pre-show and then how it kind of manifested there at the judges table, because it seemed like she melted down and lost a lot of confidence there. Do you think that's like something that she had been feeling before she went on Top Chef, or do you think she just buckled in front of the judges table, just like losing herself a little bit?
No, I think it's my interpretation was the previous week, the big loss with Sasha threw her for a loop. I mean, there was nothing in that kitchen that suggested they lacked confidence. I mean, they really thought they were doing a great job. They were doing their things. These are things they've done before. Again, this is a mid-Atlantic semifinalist for Best Chef is no slouch. And the funny thing is, you know, I always, one of the things I always say is, if you nail your protein, you're okay. She actually nailed her protein. I mean, they like the pickled mackerel. The counterfactual is, if she doesn't, you know, sort of cut that sauce with coconut milk.
Yeah.
Are we having this conversation? And I think that's the big question.
I thought Kiki was going home, honestly. Given her fufu wasn't cooked well, and that was such a main part of her dish, I thought she was going to go home. I was a little bit surprised that Brittany went home, and I think maybe part of it was just her confessionals.
Oh, I see. I thought Chris was going to go home. It seemed like, okay, the main element of Kiki's dish, which was the Saka Saka, the stew, was a winner. And so it was one of those, you know, because I thought it was a case where, oh, well, at least her stew is good. Oh, at least Brittany's mackerel was good. They didn't seem to like anything on Chris's plate. I'm worried about Chris. I'll be honest with you, Tom, little confession. I had Chris very high up on my draft board. I thought, okay, and what's worrying me about this week is I was like, all right, this guy is a good technical chef. You know, might be some questionable choices. Oh, do you want mushrooms in a dessert? But I thought he would execute.
And he didn't.
And he hasn't. Like,
just straight up burnt the plantains, yeah.
Right. And that was the whole thing. I've never cooked Haitian before. It's just, I mean, anyone can cook plantains. But I think... And by the way, it looked like a very nicely assembled or conceived dish, right? Like an epice marinated snapper. Okay, you pay homage to the spice. Pickles, a mushroom bean puree. Now, apparently the Chris Weiss rice cake wasn't executed well. The plantains weren't executed well. So that's what's worrying me about Chris, because I had him fairly high up. He seemed to me to exude a competence that said, all right, this guy's going to be around for 8 weeks.
Yeah, I would say if we did a redraft – tonight, I don't think Chris is going very high. And I think for me, Brittany goes home, and we have a really exciting Last Chance Kitchen. Now, just a heads up for our listeners, we this season are going to do our best to get these out as soon as the episode drops, which means we watch this episode pre-air, and we don't get to see Last Chance Kitchen. So what we know is that Brittany goes home. She's going to go to Last Chance Kitchen to face Sasha, which will be emotional for those two going head-to-head. But we'll recap that on the next episode. And Brittany, look, Brittany, I'm curious to see how she does here in Last Chance Kitchen. I would like to see some redemption here for her because, I mean, her accolades, her credentials are second to none in this competition. So I want to see how she does. I'm very curious. But in terms of my team, Kevin, I'm feeling best about Gabe, feeling really good about him, feeling really good about Jamie. I think Byron and Maria are just diamonds in the rough right now. I feel like they're sleeper picks here. But your pickup for Dawn, she gets 10 points for you with the win. I lose 5 points from Brittany. Maria stays in the middle. Kiki in the bottom, she gets 0 points. So that trade, Dawn and Kiki for Maria and Brittany, nets me minus 3 this week and plus 10 for you. So a differential of 13 points. A 13-point swing in week one of a trade. Oh, it's a long season, but still, that one really hurt, Kevin.
Yeah, Tom, I just got to be honest with you. I'm tired of losing. three straight seasons, our first three seasons of Pack Your Knives, I've gotten my butt whooped. I think actually 1 year it was very close.
But, yes. Yes.
You know, I'm just tired of losing, and I meant business this time. I'm not screwing around. I hate losing. So this pleases me. I love Dawn's cooking. It seems like the time management issues have been solved. I agree with you. I think Maria is definitely a mystery guest. Maria in the middle. You know, I think that's cool. And I agree with you. You know, I really am impressed with Gabe. I think you have a great pick there. But at any rate, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, the score is 50-37 after 2 weeks of Pack Your Knives fantasy. Kevin, you have 50. I have 37. It's going to be close here in week three. I'm excited. You know, we have I will say I really like that we have the Top Chef alumni just every week. I got to say, Amar, I love him. He's amazing. I think he's great. He's so fun. And I just like watching him eat the food and how his reactions are so good. I really love this element that the Top Chef alumni are there every week. And just kind of the fact that like Kwame and Gregory were able to partake in that and be like their Sherpas along this journey. It was really cool. I really love this element of this season of Top Chef, and they're making the best of a really difficult situation, and just hats off to Magical Elves and the Top Chef crew.
Yeah, I like a man who licks a plate. I like a man who licks a plate. Man after my own heart. For Tom Haberstroh, this is Kevin Ornovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.